the 12th Imam, he said that في بنت رسول الله لي أسوة حسنة. In the life of the daughter of the Prophet, Lady Fatima, yes, salam alayhi, there is a role model for me.
That's right, for us.
And there is obviously there is the things that we need to obviously explain how he takes her as a role model.
That's right.
For his life.
That's right. But what made Lady Fatima al-Zahra prominent and outstanding, as Sayyid said, among all the men and women of all times? What were her main attributes?
Yes, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Lady Zahra salamullah alayha was, of course, a great lady, a prominent lady in the history. When we look at the lifestyle of Lady Zahra salamullah alayha, we can look at her lifestyle from different perspectives.
Yes.
One is, for example, moral perspective. The other is political perspective, social or economical perspective. From different angles, we can look at her life. When it comes to her lifestyle in her family, we see that Lady Zahra salamullah alayha was a great mother, because she trained the people or his grand or great son, like Imam Hussein and Imam Hassan alayhi salam, and Lady Zainab salamullah alayha.
Nurturing the children.
These children of Lady Zahra salamullah alayha played a very great role in the history of Islam, not only in the history of Islam, history of the humanity.
Very good.
So this is the role of a great mother.
Very good.
That's why it has lots of lessons for our mothers nowadays.
Yes.
How to train, how to bring up their children.
That's right.
When it comes with her relationship to her husband, Imam Ali alayhi salatu wassalam, you see that Imam Ali is such a great person that no one except Lady Zahra could have been, let's say, a proper kind of wife for such a great person.
Or maybe vice versa, because she was the daughter of Prophet Muhammad.
Yeah,
and then,
of course,
for example, looking for a husband, who better than... Okay, see, this is really... sometimes we see some couples during the history have changed the course of history.
Exactly.
Imam Ali alayhi salam and Fatima al-Zahra were among such couples.
Yeah. Okay. But I think the most important aspect of the life of Lady Zahra salamullah alayha is her social and political aspect of her lifestyle. Because, you know, when it comes to political aspect of Lady Zahra's life, we see that she supported strongly, powerfully, the leadership and the imam and this position of Imam Ali alayhi salatu wassalam. In a way that some historians and researchers are of the view that she sacrificed herself for the sake of Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasallam.
Okay.
So because of what? Because the position of Imam or the status of Amir al-Mu'mineen and this divine leadership was such an important position that a great personality like Lady Zahra salamullah alayha sacrificed herself for this, to protect, to preserve, to support this position.
That's right.
And when it comes to the social life of Lady Zahra salamullahi alayha, you see that after the demise of the Holy Prophet, she were going outside the house, speaking with the people, presenting lectures, speeches among the people, to guide the people, to teach the people. And I think this is also one of the really, really important aspect of the lifestyle of Lady Zahra salamullah alayha, because it shows that Lady Zahra, first of all, was a knowledgeable kind of woman.
Yes.
Because hadn't she been a knowledgeable person, she would have not been able to support Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, to spread the teachings of Islam, to teach the people, to train the scholarly figures like Imam Hassan, Imam Hussein, Lady Zainab salamullahi alayha.
Especially after Saqifah event, she went to the Muhajir and Ansar,
the
gatherings over there, and talks about the virtues and merits of Imam Ali alayhi salam. So she must be the best orator. I mean, a person who can give lecture, you know, a person who has mastery over different fields of studies regarding Islamic ones, you know, and talking about the from the tongue of Prophet Muhammad.
Yeah, of course.
He is talking.
Yeah, of course, when it comes to the way that the Prophet sallallahu alayhi treated and behaved Lady Zahra sallallahu alayhi, there are great lessons for us, because it is narrated by both Sunni and Shia scholars and narrators that even when Lady Zahra Salamullahi Alayha was a child, was for example some 8 or 7 or 9 years old, when she was to enter the house of the Holy Prophet Salawatullahi Alayhi, it is said that the Prophet stood up and moved towards Lady Zahra Salamullahi Alayha
as a sign of
and
respect.
kissed her hand and brought it and seated in his position, in his place. Yes, this was the way that Prophet Salawatullahi Alayhi respected Lady Zahra Salamullahi Alayha.
That's right. The high position. We all know the story of the creation of Lady Fatima al-Zahra. Prerequisites and the requirements that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala put for Prophet Muhammad as a prescription, we can say, and these necessary conditions for Lady Khadija and Hazrat Muhammad, all of them have shown of, we can say, the birth of a person who is going to change the course of history, that is Lady Fatima al-Zahra. Okay, and these are all documented in both Shiite and Sunni references, yes. And all we can
what
say.
What I mentioned was from Sunni sources.
Yes, authentic. They are authentic.
Yes, of course.
That's all right. Okay, what other aspects of the life of Lady Fatima can we highlight for today's world, especially for the women, how they can benefit from her character?
Well, I want to go through a list of her, we can say, characteristics or virtues that she had. For example, number one, we see that she was an exemplary daughter of a father, where she reached to a level where Prophet said that you are Umm Abiha. You're the mother of your father. You know, the mother takes care of their children.
Children.
Right?
Yes.
And if a daughter is taking too much care of the father so that he feels the love of mother from the daughter, that's the level where she was. So for our daughters who are in the home, when they take care of their parents, or the especially fathers, obviously,
Good.
We need to have a role model. And Hazrat Fatima Tazara Salamu Alayha was the role model, and there is a story obviously behind it, when the Prophet has given.
So
I'm going through the list right now.
This aspect could be very much related to the daughters and the girls taking care of their parents,
the role that they have there in the house,
so
how
important
to take care of father or mother or the rest of the house.
Good,
A loving and supporting wife.
Yes.
That Imam Ali said that I never heard any word against me or anything that I have done from my wife.
Any frown even.
Any frown, yeah.
Any frown.
Anything.
From, yes.
She was a caring mother, as our brother has said.
Yes.
And at the place of mother, I just remembered, one of the poems, it was said in Urdu by one of our teachers. He said, Dar pe Zahra ke agar koi bhi izzat pa jaye, phir to bin mange hi dunya mein wo jannat pa jaye. صدقے کیا چیز ہے آغوش جناب زہرا اس میں پل جائے جو بچہ وہ امامت پا جائے. Now this means that when you go enter into the door of the Fatima Zahra Salam Alayha, the best thing that you can take, the least thing, the minimum thing that you can take from there is that you become honorable. It gives you the honor.
Yes.
And let me give you an example about the honor, how you become honorable, that if someone is brought up in the house of Lady Fatima, they become imam. This is the least thing which a person, a boy who's been brought up in the life, in the house of Fatima al-Zahra salamu alayha, the least thing
for
is...
For sure he's an imam.
Yes, for sure he's an imam.
Okay.
And the beautiful aspect is that we know that Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein, according to the Sunni and Shia, there is no doubt in it, in all traditions and all the books, it is authentic that they both are the masters of the heaven.
Heaven.
And
the youth of the heaven.
Yes.
Yes.
Of the youth of the heaven.
Yes, yes.
And on the other hand, we have heard that if you want heaven, it's below your feet of your mother.
Yes.
Yes, the aqdama ummah.
Yes, yes, yes.
It's below your feet.
Okay.
So the masters of the heaven, the youth of the heaven, where is their heaven?
Mm-hmm.
It's below the feet of the Fatima Zahra Salamu Alayha, the Lady Fatima. So these are the ranks, like as a daughter, as a wife, as a mother. You know, she's a role model.
Yes.
So these are the aspects that we need to have. That when we have our mothers, if they want to train, if they want to brought up their kids, they should brought up. When Lady Fatima is giving imam, an infallible imam to the society, so the minimum thing that our sisters can do when they're brought up their children or the sons or daughters, they should give the best people to the society. So she's a role
That's
model.
Right.
in that aspect. On the other hand, she was also well aware of her rights, and whenever necessary, stood up against for them, as brother has mentioned.
Yes,
that
especially about Fadak.
Yeah, especially about.
Yes.
So a lady is she didn't become a victim.
Yes,
who just remain at home
silence,
without saying anything.
Yes.
Because I am a woman, I cannot raise. No, she taught us.
She raised her voice.
She raised her voice,
injustice,
and she said
time,
that look,
right,
whenever it's injustice against you, whenever someone is taking your rights, either it's you know your brother, sister, I don't know, whoever is it, you need to raise your voice. You need to know how to basically raise your voice, and this shows us that reflects that she was well known of the rights as well. She was well known of the environment of that time. And a lady should be aware of all these aspects when
yes.
she's living. You know, today if we have this feminism, for example, the
yes.
The things that are going through the feminism.
Yes.
Why they are? Because the ladies of that time and the ladies of now,
mm-hmm.
they don't know about their rights.
Yes.
And they're wrongly putting up their rights. You know,
yes.
they're wrongly raising their voice. They don't know what is the right.
The
if
true
at
right.
That time, yeah,
yes.
the true light, right.
Yes.
If at that time, the women of the in the beginning of the history, like in the West, if they could save their modesty
mm-hmm.
and not become a tool of man
yes.
for marketing, for sale. Now we see like all the advertisements, we have half-naked women. Sorry
yes.
to say that.
Yes, yes.
You know, we have this. And if in an advertisement, in TV advertisement, either it's for a pen, maybe, I don't know, for a soap, for the pamper of the babies, every single aspect you take.
Yes.
If there is no lady in it.
Yes.
If there is no woman, and if she's not half naked, then obviously, you know, people don't see your advertisement.
Yes, that's
so
right.
This,
unfortunately.
They have become a tool.
Yes.
Whereas they need to learn the lesson of chastity.
Chastity from especially,
modesty.
Yes,
yes.
That's
especially
right.
from the Lady Fatima.
The Lady Fatima.
So our Muslim sisters and brother, sisters especially, they should think about this, that the West, if they're talking about being naked or, you know, if they're saying like the freedom is being naked, that is not the freedom. The freedom is what is in line with the character of Lady Fatima, salamu alayha.
That's all right.
So
okay.
these are the main things that are, you know, women can have. Lady Fatima inherited the genius
yes.
From the Prophet, the wisdom.
Yes.
She was a wise woman. She had the determination, the willpower that she had,
yes.
the piety, patience, knowledge, nobility. We can have like many things. We
yes.
can see all these things in her life. Therefore,
that's
our sisters today, our daughters today, our mothers today must follow the footsteps of Lady Fatima.
That's all right.
If they want to have a good society, if they want to be the one, be
mm-hmm.
the one who they are, basically.
Yes.
They, if they want their own entity as a woman,
yes,
they need to follow the footsteps
of Lady
Fatima.
And she was martyred for her cause, you know.
Yes.
And finally, she sacrificed all the things she had, especially her life, for her main cause, that is the Prophet life. Okay, Shaykh, anything missed about Lady Fatima? Your final
yes,
remarks?
Yes, just from a moral perspective, I can mention these two important points regarding the personality and characteristics of Lady Zahra, salamullah alayha. It is narrated by Imam Hassan al-Mujtaba, alayhi salam. He says that I was just listening to my mother during the night. She was praying.
Mm-hmm.
I listened carefully to the way that my mother was praying. Finally, I asked my mother that in the whole night you prayed, but you prayed for the others,
uh-huh.
not for yourself,
good.
For the neighbors, for example, the relatives, the other people. Why is it such that you didn't pray for yourself? Lady Zahra Samullah alayha said that awwal jar thumma
Thumma dar.
You have to give priority first to the neighbors.
To the neighbors,
then
yes.
yourself.
Then
this is a very nice narration.
Yeah,
of
it's a lesson, you know.
A great lesson, yeah.
This is what all freedom seekers across the world and justice seekers have been thinking, you know.
Yeah, you should.
Yes, first others, then yourself.
Yeah. Yeah,
now,
yeah,
if you connect the hadith of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, which I said in the beginning,
yes,
that in the life of the Lady of Prophet, there is a role model for me, then definitely he is also praying for others first before he prays for the other.
Okay, and
himself.
the second and the last point is about this ayah in the Holy Quran, وَيُطْعِمُونَ الطَّعَامَ عَلَى حُبِّهِ. مسكينا ويتيما وأسيرا. So Lady Zahra Salamullah Alayha gave the breakfast what they actually ate for iftar in Ramadan for 3 days.
Yes.
And the first day they gave it to, I mean she gave it to يُطْعِمُونَ طَعَامَ عَلَى حُبِّهِ مِسْكِينًا.
Yes.
So the first day there was a poor man, a needy man, came to them and she gave them, gave the breakfast to that man. And the second day يَتِيمًا وَيُطْعِمُونَ طَعَامَ عَلَى حُبِّهِ مِسْكِينًا وَيَتِيمًا.
An
orphan came. Yes. Yeah. But the third day is nice.
Yes.
And the third day Asir came.
Yes.
You know, Asir is not a Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
Because a Muslim cannot be Asir.
Oh.
Asir is the one who is captured from the battlefield.
Okay.
And they are non-Muslims.
Okay.
And the third day, Lady Zahra Salamullah Alayha gave, and the third day, which is the hardest day, because for 3 days they fasted and they gave it.
Yes.
And the third day she gave it to a non-Muslim, an Asir.
Okay.
This is the way they taught us that even if someone is in need of help, in need of, let's say, something, even if he or she is not a Muslim.
Yes,
he's not a Muslim. And he is a captive who was captured from the battlefield.
Help him.
The enemy.
Yes.
Help him even if that is the third day of breakfast.
Wow.
This is the two great lessons.
The best way in order to establish dialogue, you know, between Islam and the other religions, truly, the school of Father Prophet Muhammad, Hazrat Fatima al-Zahra, and the Ahlul Bayt, you know, as are, they shall call themselves all the sons of Fatima. As you know, and we know that Fatima and Zahra are among the, we can say, the most frequent names that are chosen for girls all across the world.
Exactly.
And all across the Islamic world, whether they are Sunni or Shia. That's all right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Rouhani and Sayyid Mohsen, for a nice elaboration regarding the character of Lady Fatima al-Zahra and what lessons today's women in the 21st century can take from her character. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/en/Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Allahumma salli ala Fatimata wa abiha wa baliha wa baniha bi'adad ma ahata bihi ilmu.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Germany has reportedly cut its reliance on Russian supplies from 55% last year to the current 20%. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of the Russian publication RT noted Germany has cut its reliance on Russian gas by nearly two-thirds compared to last year. Bloomberg reported recently citing the country's Association of Energy and Water Industries, BDEW. According to the report, the share of Russian gas consumed in Germany has fallen to around 20% this year, from 55% in 2021. This happened amid a significant drop in imports of the Russian fuel to the EU due to sanctions, explosions in September on Russia's Nord Stream gas pipelines, which left them inoperable, and Berlin's moves to diversify supplies. Germany is reportedly short by around 50 billion cubic meters of gas in yearly deliveries as a result of the reduction in Russian supplies. According to BDEW, however, the country has managed to reduce its overall demand by around 15% this year due to mild weather and a campaign to reduce consumption. Germany has compensated for the reduction in Russian supplies by increasing imports from the Netherlands, Belgium, and France, according to BDEW. The country also plans to step up its liquefied natural gas LNG imports. Last week, Germany launched its first floating LNG terminal at the North Sea port of Wilhelmshaven, with another four set to be deployed in the coming month. The planned terminals are expected to give the country an annual LNG import capacity of at least 29.5 BCM, roughly a third of its yearly gas demand of 90.5 BCM. According to Chancellor Olaf Scholz, the terminals will help ensure that Germany's energy supplies do not depend on pipelines from Russia. LNG deliveries, however, are expected to cost much more than Russian pipeline gas. Meanwhile, Politico reported EU countries finally struck a gas price cap deal after months of fraught divisions over a key aspect of the bloc's response to the energy crisis, but the final settlement may end up pleasing no one. Energy ministers meeting in Brussels for their final summit of the year reached political agreements on a so-called market correction mechanism. Under the plan, which is set to come into force on February 15th and last for 1 year, trades on Europe's gas exchanges will be capped at 180 euros per megawatt hour if that price level is reached for 3 working days and European wholesale gas prices are, for the same length of time, 35 euros above the global price of liquefied natural gas LNG. The complex policy tool, which is set well below the 275 euros trigger price originally proposed by the European Commission and applies to month-ahead, 3-month and 1-year contracts, was approved by EU countries with a qualified majority. Hungary opposed, while Austria and the Netherlands abstained. Germany, which had long opposed price cap proposals pushed by an alliance of southern and eastern countries, as well as Belgium, was able to support the scheme, but only with significant safeguards, which addressed Berlin's concerns that intervening in the European gas market could drive international LNG cargoes away from the continent, just as Europe and Germany in particular is trying to wean itself off its former addiction to Russian gas. The policy was designed to avoid the kinds of price spikes seen in the summer, when prices at Europe's main trading hub, the TTF, briefly hit 345 euros per MWH. Those prices have now cooled considerably to 115 euros per MWH, but remain 4 to 5 times higher than what they averaged before Russia-Ukraine conflict and threw Europe's gas supply into chaos, piling pressure on domestic consumers and businesses, particularly in energy-intensive sectors like chemicals, steel, and glass. If ever triggered, the cap would, in theory, apply for at least 20 working days. Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni called it a little big victory, while Polish Prime Minister Mateusz Morawiecki said it spells the end. But Dutch Energy Minister Rob Jetten told Politico he was still worried about the measure's impact. The focus should be on lowering gas prices for European consumers while also guaranteeing security of gas supply, he said. I'm not completely convinced this market correction mechanism is beneficial for both those topics. In a sign of how divisive the discussion still remains, a senior diplomat from one pro-cap country said the measure is not enough and only a temporary emergency measure, saying wholesale gas prices are still 4 times higher than normal and a broader market reform was necessary, they said. This gives the impression that we can afford 180 euros per megawatt hour, which we cannot. There are still hurdles in the way of the policy ever coming into force. The European Commission has throughout shared the concerns of the anti-price cap countries about the plan's possible impact on gas supply and market stability. Energy Commissioner Kadri Simpson emphasized in a post-summit press conference that the Commission stands ready to suspend ex ante the activation of the mechanism if a forthcoming report by the EU Markets Watchdog ESMA and the energy regulator ACER, along with analysis by the European Central Bank, shows that the risks overweigh the benefits. The bank has already spoken out about possible risks to market stability. Europe's cold snap this December has seen gas storage levels reduced from near full to 84%. That's still a fairly comfortable level for this time of the year. But how the price cap might interact with the global gas market next spring and summer, when European countries will once again be racing to fill their underground gas storage facilities, will be a question for energy ministers when they meet again in 2023. A new year, but the same energy crisis.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, prevention in family pathology. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of prevention in family pathology. When we talk about pathology, we mean that what are the causes that are affecting the social system or the family system in a family. Therefore, when we talk about the issues, we need to talk about the prevention as well. The first prevention which we must give importance to that is to give importance to the religious teachings in a family. Generally, we have seen that the families who are basically seeing a loss in their family system, in the relation within the family, generally they don't pay attention to the teachings, the Islamic teachings or the religious teachings which are said in the Quran or which are emphasized by the Prophet to follow. Therefore, it is necessary to have an attention towards the Islamic teachings or the religious teachings. Why? Because religious is a complete set of life. It's a complete book, and it's a complete way of living a life. Therefore, when we follow the religion according to the teachings of Quran or the pure Quranic teachings or Muhammadan teachings, the teachings by the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, then we will be able to save our family. We will be able to prevent our family or cure the family relations. Therefore, it is necessary to pay attention to the Islamic teachings and the religious teachings which are said in the Quran. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of prevention in the family pathology. Now, we said that it is necessary to have attention towards the religious teachings and the Islamic teachings that are said by the Quran, that have come in the Quran. Most important thing, if we look in the Quran, for example, when we look at the laws, for example, the law of praying, the law related to the fasting, to the Hajj, I don't know, the other laws that we have, for example, for the criminal and the social crime, if someone commits that, the laws, basically, the rulings, the total verses that we have in the Quran, there are only 500 verses, whereas the whole Quran is composed of more than 6,000 verses. Now, the question is, what are the other verses about? The major part of the other verses is related to the ethics. And the other major part, which is very important, is related to the theological issues, to the issues related to the belief. Therefore, we need to have the true beliefs in the family. The parents, they should teach their kids the true beliefs, the true theological issues, so that they do not shake when they go ahead and when they talk to someone about their beliefs. If someone asks them a question, if someone is bringing an argument, they should be able to answer the argument in its best way through the Quranic teaching. So therefore, when we say that we need to have attention towards the Islamic teachings, the very first thing is the aqidah. It is the belief. It is my beliefs, that why I believe in one God. Other than that, obviously, we need to know about the issues and the question and the doubts that generally people have. For example, why you wear the veil or do hijab, why you pray 5-time prayers, why you mourn in the month of Muharram. So all these things, we need to know about them. And when we know them, when we have a firm knowledge about them, then obviously we can save even our family from being dispersed, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/en/call-of-islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
The U.S.
is the number one violator of human rights in the world. While the U.S. regime claims to be defender of human rights in the world, there are reports that the inhumane conditions and treatment are rife across this country's immigrant detention system. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of Truth Out wrote in this regard, human rights advocates recently renewed calls for U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement to stop force-feeding detained people and end its reliance on mass detention after The Intercept obtained and published footage of a hunger-striking asylum seeker being force-fed in 2019. The video depicting nurses forcibly inserting a tube into the nose of Indian asylum seeker Ajay Kumar in an El Paso, Texas detention center marks the first time the U.S. police has ever seen the federal government force-feed someone, according to The Intercept. As the outlet notes, with Ajay Kumar's consent, The Intercept first requested the video through the Freedom of Information Act in January 2020. After ICE refused the request, The Intercept filed a lawsuit and ICE subsequently agreed to turn over the footage after redacting the faces and names of everyone who appears in the video aside from Kumar's. It was by no means the first, only or last time ICE officials have carried out involuntary and invasive medical procedures in violation of international law. A 2021 report by the ACLU and Physicians for Human Rights, titled Behind Closed Doors, Abuse and Retaliation Against Hunger Strikers in U.S. Immigration Detention, details hunger strikes by at least 1,378 people from 74 countries in 62 public and private detention centers in 24 states from 2013 to 2017, stretching across both the Obama and Trump administrations. The ACLU PHR investigation, based on more than 10,000 pages of documents obtained under the Freedom of Information Act, reveals the extent to which ICE responds to hunger strikers not by improving conditions in accordance with prisoners' demands, but by carrying out punitive treatments including force feeding, forced hydration, and forced urinary catheterization, among other methods. ICE's horrifying response to peaceful hunger strikes, which are free speech protected by the First Amendment, with coercion and violence, continues to expose the cruelty of our immigration detention system. Anicio Coe, senior staff attorney with the ACLU's National Prison Project and report co-author, said recently in a statement, adding, "It's past time to hold this inhumane practice and ultimately to shut down the ICE detention machine." "Respect for patient autonomy is at the heart of medicine," said Dr. Parveen Parmar, a PHR medical expert and associate professor of clinical emergency medicine at the University of Southern California, adding, "Force-feeding is not only a violation of an individual's human rights, but a violation of the oath each of us take as physicians to respect the rights of those entrusted to our care." The World Medical Association, the American Medical Association, and Physicians for Human Rights have unequivocally stated that force-feeding is in violation of medical ethics, Pramar continued. "It is high time that ICE and the immigration justice system align with the medical community and outlaw this horrific, painful, and destructive practice in all detention settings." Gianna Naples Mitchell, a research advisor at PHR and co-author of the ACLU PHR report on hunger strikes in ICE detention, noted that under international law, force feeding constitutes cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment and can rise to the level of torture, violating multiple international human rights treaties. Mitchell noted this abhorrent practice is often not possible without the participation or complicity of health professionals. Although this chilling footage depicts former President Trump's Department of Homeland Security, force-feeding continues today under the Biden administration. President Biden should seize the opportunity to change course by adopting a new directive on hunger strikes and addressing the underlying cause of so many hunger strikes, an abusive immigration detention system. Meanwhile, Common Dreams reported over 100 rights organizations recently pressured Joe Biden to end mass detention of immigrants, describing the practice as inhumane, unjust, unnecessary, and fiscally responsible. We urge you to recognize that our shared values of humanity and compassion require the dismantling of our system of mass immigrant detention. 114 groups wrote in a letter to Biden. In particular, we urge you to support the closure of immigration and customs enforcement detention sites, prevent and development of new detention sites or expansion of existing ones, and seek reduced funding for immigration detention for Congress, the letter added. While emphasizing that inhuman conditions and treatment are rife across the immigrant detention system, the organizations highlighted some examples of abuse documented at immigration and customs enforcement facilities across the country. At Baker County Detention Center in Florida, people have been pepper sprayed while already pinned down or confined and targeted with anti-black racial slurs and harassment, the letter states. Women at Baker have endured humiliation, such as being denied sanitary sites and clean clothes, forcing them to sleep in soaked sheets. The letter adds that at the Stewart Detention Center in Georgia, women have been forced to engage in sexual contact with a staff member, blocked from leaving medical exam rooms, and forced or coerced into giving access to intimate parts without medical justification. Now is the time for principal leadership following the long-awaited court ruling lifting the Title 42 public health expulsion order, the groups asserted, adding, as your administration stands up processing of individuals, we urge you to not fall back on harmful, arbitrary, and unnecessary detention in response to people seeking protection, the letter added. The lead attorney for the ACLU's challenge to Title 42 called the federal court decision striking a down a huge victory that literally has life and death stakes. Last week also saw a Senate hearing and report confirming the systematic medical abuse of migrant women in ICE detention, as well as former President Donald Trump announcing that he is running again in 2024. Trump's administration was globally condemned for its unethical, ineffective, and inhuman policies, particularly forcibly separating migrant families. Critics have urged that despite his campaign promises, Biden looks a lot like Trump on border issues, especially on Title 42. Biden positioned himself as a clear counterpoint to Trump's cruelty, but instead, Biden is carrying on business as usual, breaking promises and tearing apart communities, declared Estera Genderari, advocacy director at Detention Watch Network, one of the groups behind the new letter. She argued, it is urgent for Biden to act boldly to rebuke white supremacy by protecting and welcoming immigrants in the next 2 years of his administration. Detention is inhumane, morally and financially costly, and completely unnecessary. Andrea Carmacco, policy director at Freedom for Immigrants, similarly stressed that immigration detention is animated by racism, xenophobia, and hate, the very forces Biden vowed to fight against upon taking the White House. Instead, Biden has overseen a dramatic increase in the use of immigration detention since taking office. This administration has utterly failed our communities who continue to be subject to abhorrent human rights abuses inside detention. It's clear that immigration detention is beyond the reach of reform.
which is why we demand Biden close detention centers and free people back to the love and safety of their communities. The letter points out that while the whole system is problematic, private prison companies are some of the biggest beneficiaries of mass immigrant detention and have pocketed hundreds of millions in taxpayer dollars from IC contracts, many of which include wasteful contract terms. Just as you look, bold action to phase out the Department of Justice private prison contracts, we urge you to act decisively on immigrant detention sites, the vast majority of which are run by private prison companies, as a first step towards ending mass immigration incarceration, the groups wrote, adding, "You have voiced a desire to do just that, and it is not too late." Continuing to invest billions of dollars in immigration jails and detention centers in the U.S. is fiscally irresponsible and deprives newcomers arriving to the U.S. of dignity and access to due process. The letter argues, "We urge you to instead invest taxpayer dollars in our communities by supporting nonprofit organizations providing community-based support services to those navigating the immigration court system." According to Serena Shabaya, executive director at the National Immigration Project, another letter signatory, people navigating their immigration cases should be able to do so alongside their families and communities, not behind bars or while being surveilled by ICE. Heidi Altman Group's National Immigrant Justice Center not only signed the letter, but also regularly filed civil rights complaints on behalf of clients who endure solitary confinement, medical negligence, and blatant harassment and abuse in IC detention on a daily basis, she said. The Biden administration can no longer continue to blindly operate a system that is inherently cruel. The time to act is now.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Role of arrogant powers policies in recent bitter events in Iran is obvious. This is the part of speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on October 3, 2022, during the joint graduation ceremony for the cadets studying in the academies of the Islamic Republic of Iran's armed forces. This ceremony was held in Imam Hassan al-Mushtaba alayhi salam University of Officer and Police Training. Some famous athletes and actors have also taken their own stance. In my opinion, this has no importance. You should not focus on these issues. Our athletes are part of a good community. And so are our actors. There are many faithful, loving, honorable people in these communities. Now, when a few people say some things, this is not of any significance. It is up to the judiciary to determine whether or not their statements are considered crimes. But generally speaking, their words have no significance or value. These behaviors that make our enemies happy do not have the ability to contaminate our community of actors and athletes. The last thing I would like to say is to send many greetings to the police who have been martyred, the martyrs in the armed forces, the martyrs for national security, the recent martyrs, and all the martyrs who were on the path of righteousness. May Allah's greetings, mercy and blessings be upon you.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
If you strive in the cause of God, victory will definitely follow. The following is a part of the speech delivered on June 28, 2022, by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the head of the judiciary branch and a number of top officials and employees of the judiciary. In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, all praise is due to God, Lord of the worlds, and peace and greetings be upon our Master, Muhammad, and upon his immaculate progeny, particularly the remnant of God on earth. I welcome you, dear brothers and dear sisters. You are influential figures for the important issue of the country. One of the important things that the judiciary does is influencing the most important issues of the country. This is the role you play. God willing, you will be successful. This is a grace from God. I'm pleased, and thanks to God, this epidemic has become somewhat less now, and we have been blessed with this success of being able to visit you in person. First of all, I wish to honor the memory of the dear martyr, the late Ayatollah Beheshti. May Allah be pleased with him. All the martyrs who were martyred along with him, as well as the martyrs of the judiciary. May God exalt the degrees of all of them by His grace.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The PTI lawmakers did not appear before the Speaker of the National Assembly for the confirmation of their resignations, which they tendered in April following the ouster of former Prime Minister Imran Khan through a vote of no confidence. While responding to a letter written by the top leadership of Khan's party on December 15, the Speaker of the Parliament, Raja Parvez Ashraf, called PTI's MPs to appear one by one in his chamber for the legal exercise under the rules of procedures and conduct of business in the country's National Assembly, terming it as another U-turn of Imran Khan in his political career. The lawmakers belonging to treasury benches criticized the policies of the PTI party chief, saying that agenda of the former prime minister is only to politically destabilize Pakistan.
The Speaker of the National Assembly, through a written letter, asked the PTI lawmakers to come and complete the constitutional requirements for their resignations. But the PTI leadership is using the move as a political stunt. actually they are not ready to resign from the parliament.
While defending his party decision, the PTI leadership says that it will approach the country's top court to seek acceptance of their mass resignations instead of the parliament, and will also dissolve the assemblies in Punjab and Khyber Pakhtunkhwa provinces.
Why we are dissolving our own governed assemblies in two key provinces of the country? Because the country is heading towards destruction under the rule of an imported government. The only way to save the country is to hold free, fair and transparent elections.
Amid political tug-of-war in the country, Pakistan's former PM Imran Khan announced last week that he would go to the parliament on Thursday to confirm the resignations of his party lawmakers and dissolve the Punjab and Khyber Pakhtunkhwa assemblies on 23rd of December. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
The Taliban officials on Tuesday ordered a nationwide ban on university education for Afghan women. Earlier, a letter made public by the spokesman for the Ministry of Higher Education, Ziaullah Hashimi, outlining that the measure would take effect immediately in private and public universities. Today, the Taliban forces barred women from entering Kabul University.
This piece of news was really disappointing. Last night, when I was told that the Taliban have ordered girls to be excluded from universities, I couldn't eat or sleep. After so many efforts and attending several classes in hope of making a bright future, they at once ruined everything. This order is very painful and unacceptable. It has to be reversed.
This was very shocking. Nowadays, we've been sitting our final test. Today, despite knowing that they won't let us in, I arrived to the university. This is very difficult for an Afghan girl to comprehend the weight of being barred from getting education. So far, I've been worrying for my sisters who are banned from schools, and from now on, I should be concerned about my future too.
Afghan experts warn that the new order will have a devastating impact on the future of women as well as the entire Afghan nation. They urge the Taliban authorities to stop rolling back Afghan women's rights.
It is a catastrophic decision to ban women from universities. This can also be seen as a terrifying shock for Afghan society, especially the youth and women. It is so bitter and concerning. Previously, the explosion hit our girl students in tuition centers, but this devastating order is targeting the progress of a whole nation. The effects and consequences of this illogical order are unfortunate and irreparable in different arenas.
And it's difficult to imagine how a country can...
In addition to oppositions from inside Afghanistan, the United Nations and several countries have condemned the order. They have signaled that the Taliban administration won't get recognition until they equally observe the human rights of all Afghans. After taking power, the Taliban promised a softer role and upholding women's rights. But today, many here say that the Taliban have been failing to abide by their promises. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Japan has slowly developed the scope and scale of its military forces since its defeat in World War II, despite its pacifist constitution. Prime Minister Fumio Kishida Friday announced a major shift in its post-war self-defense principle.
When considering strengthening our defense capabilities this time, we will assume various situations and consider whether the current capabilities of self-defense forces can deter threats to Japan based on the capabilities of our opponents and new ways of fighting.
Outside the Japanese embassy in Seoul, South Korea, activists protested against Japan's new military plans. Japan ruled over Korea for much of the first half of the 20th century. Civic leaders argue Japan's force buildup, to include various U.S. missiles and counterstrike strategy, can enable its military to again become offensive in nature.
The Japanese government's so-called counterattack capability actually involves preemptively striking enemy bases in North Korea, China, and Russia with missiles. As a result, Japan's principle of self-defense is completely broken, and the peace constitution, its minimum responsibility as a war criminal state, remained empty.
Japan suggests its response.